From the heartland of America and the gateway to the West, good morning, good evening, wherever you may be across the nation, around the world. I'm George Norrie, and welcome to Coast AM. Later tonight, those open lines. Flew into St. Louis today in an incredible headwind. You know, normally takes 3.5 hours to get here from Los Angeles. 4 hours and 15 minutes. The winds were really pushing us back. In Indonesia, a surge of searing gas raced down the sides of Mount Merapi, smothering entire villages as it killed or seriously burned those caught in its path. The death toll after the volcano's largest eruption in a century has now soared to 122, and it just doesn't stop. A small earthquake has shaken Long Beach, California, and nearby areas of Southern California. The U.S. Geological Survey says the magnitude 3.7 tremor occurred at 9:06 a.m. Friday at a depth of about 11.5 miles beneath the port city on the South Los Angeles County coast. Jim Berkland was just with us, and he kept saying, "You're going to have an earthquake." And, Jim, we did. Not that big, but it still happened.
My kind of quake. Everybody knows what it was, and it was on the first day of the 8-day seismic window. I couldn't have asked for more for the Los Angeles area.
Is this a sign of things to come, Jimmy?
Well, further to the east there, in the desert, is where the big one is expected at any time. You know, there was movement in 1857 along the San Andreas of 30 feet sideways.
Wow.
And according to arithmetic, there's been about 30 feet of energy stored up along the fault since then. So it's ready to go.
Jim, you put out a website. You inform people about earthquakes, predictions. What can people do to get this?
Well, just go to the website. It's Syzygy Job, S-Y-Z-Y-G-Y-J-O-B, .com.
You got
and,
it.
And or you can get it. I urge a lot of people to get a sample of my newsletter, which I've mailed out to many people since the last time I was on your show here.
Absolutely.
This was mailed to P.O. Box 1926 in Glen Ellen, California. That's the Valley of the Moon, and the moon plays a big role in my earthquake predictions. Yeah. And it's Glen Ellen in California, 95442. I returned to where I was raised, and I didn't feel an earthquake. You're a native Californian, and I was 27 before I felt my first one, and it really shook Glen Ellen. But it was centered there in Daly City, San Francisco. Did quite a bit of damage down there.
Well, a 3.7, you can feel that, can't you, Jim?
Oh, absolutely. I felt a 1.9, and I asked the newspaper to ask for anybody else that felt it, and I got 5 more responses, all within about 5 miles of the epicenter.
All right, very good. Jim, keep your eyes on it. I have a feeling a big one is coming. Texas Republican Representative Ron Paul, he's been on our program before, said he will push to examine the Federal Reserve's monetary policy decisions if he takes control of the congressional subcommittee that oversees the central bank as expected in January. This is what he says. "I think they're way too independent. They just shouldn't have this kind of power." He has been a longtime critic of the Federal Reserve. Jerome Corsi, who writes for WorldNet Daily and an accomplished author, let's get his reaction to this. Is Ron Paul going to get this done, Jerry?
I think he's got a great chance of getting it done. Ron Paul has been for years calling for there to be a complete audit of the Federal Reserve, and I think now he's going to press for this issue and has a good chance of getting it accomplished.
Well, you know, JFK tried to tighten up the Fed, and look what happened to him.
Well, yes, I know it's, but when the Federal Reserve is now about to buy $600 billion of treasury debt, and some of the top fund managers, we've got Bill Gross at PIMCO, manages the largest mutual funds in the world, is saying that's going to devalue the dollar by 20%. The money in your wallet and your bank account declined by 20% because of what the Fed is doing to buy treasury debt. I think Ron Paul is going to have a very good case.
Jerry, you and I predicted last October, 2009, that there'd be a war with Iran because of their nuclear buildup. It hasn't happened yet, but they're getting close. What do you think's going to happen?
I still think that Israel is going to get to a point, George, where they're not going to be able to allow Iran to have a nuclear weapon. We're going to see now after the midterm elections are over what Israel does. But every day when Iran gets closer and closer to having a nuclear weapon, it's an existential threat to the survival of Israel. One nuclear weapon, even low yield, detonated over Tel Aviv would destroy the modern Jewish state of Israel as we know it.
What's new with you, Jerry?
I'm continuing to write my Red Alert newsletter, George. It's now free, redalert.wnd.com. I'm writing a couple of new books on Barack Obama. The first one should be out next April.
All right, very good. Thank you. Jerry Corsi. Now, I don't know how many of you have baseball cards. I used to, but Mom gave them away. But a rare Honus Wagner baseball card that was bequeathed to an order of the Roman Catholic nuns has sold at auction. Get this, $262,000. The Baltimore Sun, School Sisters of Notre Dame, put the card up for sale after inheriting it from a brother of a deceased nun. The sale price exceeded the expectations of auctioneers at the Dallas-based Heritage Auction Galleries. Space Shuttle Discovery's final voyage is off until at least the end of the month now because of a large hydrogen gas leak that forced yet another launch delay. It's the fourth postponement in a week for Discovery's mission to the International Space Station with six veteran astronauts and the first humanoid robot bound for orbit. Great balls of fire have been reported swooping over eastern Canada and several U.S. states. Even NASA's on the case. Some people think it could be that comet, Hartley 2. Others say, we have no idea what it is. We're watching it, just so you know. You know, Dr. Roger Lear is one of the world's most important leaders in physical evidence research involving the field of ufology. He and a surgical team have performed numerous surgeries on apparent alien abductees. He's got some stories next that will just chill you on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast to Coast. I'm George Norrie. As I mentioned, Dr. Roger Lear, he's way at the forefront of the field of ufology, and his surgical team performs a number of surgeries on apparent alien abductees. I witnessed many years ago with producer Tom Danheiser a surgery with Dr. Roger Lear and his team. It was one of the most baffling things I've ever seen. We've played that tape numerous times on Coast to Coast AM. Roger's back with us with some incredible stories, back also from the Bay Area UFO Expo. Roger, how are you, my friend?
Oh, very good, George. And, you know, I'm not in the prediction business, but I will stick my neck out and say the folks that are listening tonight are going to hear a Coast show, which I believe will go down in history.
I think you're right. I think you're right indeed. Tell me a little bit about what you've been doing over the past few years, Roger.
Well, we've done, as you mentioned, a number of surgeries for the removal of objects which apparently are alien implants. Alien for two reasons. Number one, they're alien to the human body because they don't belong there. And alien for a second reason is that they probably belong to a sophisticated civilization that's far, far advanced of our own. Now, we take these objects out. We essentially study them, look at them from the outside in. We look at the things that they can do, both chemically, physically, electronically. And then we compile this data and report to the public what we found. And we found some astounding things, which I'm going to talk about tonight. And these will be based only on the 15th and 16th surgeries, which were recently performed. Now, we've got some scientists that are going to come on the show with us. One is a material scientist, and his field of expertise is nanotechnology. The other one is an experimental nuclear physicist who has been on the program before. They're now both on the board of ANS Research, and I just can't wait to get to the end. But we've got to have a little background here first.
Roger, you're a doctor, and when you were going to school, surely you didn't go to school to try to dig for and uncover implants in people or alleged abductees. How did this all happen for you?
You're absolutely right, George. No, if someone had told me I'd been doing this 40 years ago, I would have said, you're halfway to the loony bin. No, I got interested in this subject, actually a long time ago when my father brought in the newspaper with a Roswell headline. But I've always had an interest in flying and astronomy. In fact, I wanted to be an astronomer, but my math grades were no good. So instead, I went into a medical field and became a podiatric surgeon. And I've been in practice now for 46 years. Then something caught my interest, and it was at a MUFON meeting. When I heard that, I said, MUFON, MUFON, what is that, the dessert? Muffins or what is it? So there's where I was. You know, I knew absolutely nothing about
Mutual UFO Network, to those who don't know what we're talking about.
Right. That's one of the largest organizations in the world. So here I was at a MUFON meeting, and it was a wonderful experience. Had a great speaker. It was local to where I live, and a very, very pleasant evening. And there was homemade chocolate chip cookies. So
perfect.
How could you beat that? So that got me started, and then I started writing a periodical for a periodical as an investigative reporter called The Vortex. And that led me to someone who showed me some X-rays, naturally, of a foot. And he touted that the objects in the X-ray were alien implants, and I turned around, laughed, and walked away. But the individual who was with me brought me back, and I said, these look like objects that were left over maybe from a previous surgery. So I said, why don't you just simply take them out and see what they are? And he said, well, I think the lady would like to have that done, but she has no money and no insurance. So I ascertained that she did not live in California, and I said, well, I'll tell you what. You bring her to California, and I'll do it all free, because I figured, well, it's worth a little bit of my time to have some fun.
Mm-hmm.
So let's have some fun and prove this is absolute poppycock. So we did two surgeries, and it went on from there, and with each one I've done, we've been able to get a little more scientific data. And, of course, we found out very strangely, George, that this takes money. So after I spent a great deal of my own, and my wife almost killed me, almost broke, we formed an organization called ANS Research and went through the paperwork to get a nonprofit status.
Good.
And we've gotten some, some outside funds. I have to thank, several people for these last two surgeries. One is Jaime Masson from Mexico, investigative reporter.
Great investigator.
Yeah, just really terrific investigator and a wonderful person. He donated funds and offered to film this, and then he was able to get international Telemundo to put up some money, and it was filmed. The show was recently shown on the 25th and 26th of this month, not long ago.
Super.
Last month, October. And they really did a wonderful job. Of course, it's in Spanish, but I understand they're going to send me a copy with the English subtitles, so we got to thank them for...
Roger, of the 15 or 16 cases that you've done, some of them, I'm sure... the objects ended up being natural, right? Or something left from a surgery, something like that?
Out of the 16 cases, we had 17 objects. One of the 17 objects was a very expensive piece of glass. The reason I say expensive was it wasn't expensive when the person stepped on it, but it was expensive to do the analysis.
To pull it out, yeah.
Well, to take it out and analyze it, because it had properties of both glass and crystal. But it's only been one out of 17 objects that didn't have any scientific interest. Now, that's, an unbelievable statistic. So part of that, I believe, is the effort that we make to investigate these cases before we ever do a surgery.
Give me your overall perspective on what you think these are. And why they're in people.
Well, I think from what we've learned so far, and I'll go into certainly more detail later, but I think sure. the communication electronic, let's put it this way, extremely advanced communication, electronic communication devices, which are relating information to someone somewhere that probably put them in, and it has something to do with the function of the human body, probably down to the DNA.
Is the information about the specifics of the person that's carrying the implant, or is it about their environment? What are they sending back?
Well, we haven't deciphered the information. We haven't gotten there yet. That's going to be one of the, you know, we found that a certain number of these objects are putting out radio waves. And in one of the cases, we find that this is a radio wave in the FM band, and I got a secure chart from the FCC through someone who I can't mention, but it turned out to be a deep space fixed or mobile communication frequency. Now, it brings the question in mind, you know, why would an advanced civilization use a radio wave for anything? Like Uncle Stan Friedman says, you know, silly effort to investigate. You know, an advanced civilization is not going to be operating with a radio wave. So that only lets me believe that perhaps somebody else is piggybacking or listening to this same information. But if you want to know why, I mean, it's safe for me to render an opinion, but that's all it is. It's an opinion. Sure. I think that the human race is being genetically manipulated. And this may not be the first time in man's history, because if you look at the historical record of man and the changes that have occurred, you might say that this has happened previously.
Interesting. Roger, what about government? What governments are aware of this? All of them?
I think that the knowledge and the information in relation to the subject and the abductions and implants and the whole ball of wax is now probably out of the hands of governments as we know them completely. I think it's in the hands of multinational private industry. And I think some people in government here, UK, Canada, other parts of the world, have a knowledge, but I think the knowledge is a select and few. You know, you say, well, above top secret, cosmic top secret, eyes only, whatever. Whatever the clearances these guys have are far beyond what the average intelligence clearances are.
Is there any benefit to us, these implants? I mean, are we learning anything? Can we learn anything from these?
Well, I may be a cockeyed optimist, but I think that one of the salvations of the world is coming from without and not from within. I don't think this is something new. As I said, I think this has happened before. I think there's quite a history of things that have happened on this earth millions of years ago till now, and it's still happening. I mean, we're on the brink of something, as you just alluded to in the news broadcast. You know, the thing that's going on with Iran and Israel, the United States, atomic warfare. Well, look what happened at the almost the brink of World War III with Russia, with the Soviet Union. We had two incidents, one in the United States, particularly maybe two in the United States, and at least one we know of in Russia, where somebody else from somewhere else intervened at the missile silos and put a stop to it. And it was shortly after that when the Berlin Wall came down. So there is external influence on mankind. And I think that the objects that individuals have implanted in them are for the benefit of mankind. I could say I could be a cockeyed optimist, but I can't see any other reason.
Roger, with all this, David Jacobs, of course, noted researcher, UFO researcher, one of the few, believes that we're being genetically altered for a planet takeover. Do you agree with that?
In part. I agree, only in part. I think, number one, there may be numerous advanced entities that are visiting this planet, and they may have different agendas. David Jacobs, I've discussed this with him before, and in relation to a hybrid program, I think there may be a group that is making hybrids. For what purpose, I'm not quite sure. Maybe it's in conjunction with another group that's genetically manipulating the human race. What if it didn't work?
Well, that's true. Roger, stay with us. We're going to be back in a moment. We're going to bring in experimental nuclear physicist Robert Bob Kuntz to join the conversation for the rest of this hour. Well, this Sunday I'll be hosting Coast to Coast. We'll be talking about the life of Zechariah Sitchin, of course, in his theories of the Sumerians and the Anunnaki genetically altering mankind from above. It's a great program. But, of course, this emerging artists will be on Sunday night, too. We do that the first Sunday of every month. And this Saturday, of course, none other than our buddy Ian Punnett with us with more High Strangeness. Ian, how are you?
Oh, it's a pleasure. Let me say, coming up tomorrow night, especially after these elections, maybe this is the time we should talk about the renegade history of the United States. You know, we often hear about how the founding fathers weren't quite the role models that we like to think they are, but just how much were these guys reprobates? How much of the early history of the United States was being dominated by criminals and people that were manipulating the system in order to come out ahead financially, more than they were patriotic. And we'll talk about that tomorrow night. Also in the first hour, Russ Baker will be on. Have you heard about the new memoir from President Bush?
Tell me. Yes.
Right?
Absolutely.
So he's got this out. He's just kind of doing the rollout. Well, Russ Baker wrote a history of the Bush family. We had him on Coast to Coast about a year and a half ago. And he says that he'll talk about the stories that President Bush is leaving out of his memoir. He'll have those in the first hour coming up tomorrow night on Coast to Coast.
Super, Ian. Take care, my friend.
Thanks, buddy.
Ian Punnett on Coast to Coast AM. We'll be back in a moment. We're going to be continuing our discussion about these incredible alien implants, or whatever they may be, with Dr. Roger Lear, and then joining us will be PhD experimental nuclear physicist Dr. Robert Kuntz. He'll be joining us next hour, another special guest as well, and there's a reason. We'll be back in a moment on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast, I'm George Norrie. We're live from St. Louis. I've got Dr. Roger Lear with us. I'm going to introduce Robert Kuntz, and then, Roger, I want you to explain Robert's involvement here. Robert Kuntz, of course, he's been on the program before, PhD experimental nuclear physicist. He has 30 years plus of experience in physics and high technology. He's been a staff scientist at the Lawrence Berkeley Lab. He has served with U.S. intelligence, taught the electronics of remote intelligence gathering. Now to you, Roger Lear. Tell us of the involvement here of Bob Kuntz and set the stage for this story.
Well, we've gotten to the point in looking at these objects that have been removed where we're looking deep into the metals, the things that that put them together. They're the basic elements, and we finally gotten down to maybe the atomic structure of how they're put together and the high strangeness that has occurred. So in doing this, Bob volunteered to take a look at some of this material and the evidence that we were producing from the laboratories, and became very interested in it, and very generously published an open letter in response to what he felt about these materials. He eventually became a board member for ANS Research, and in just recently now, with the new things that we have found, Bob has stuck his neck out and laid out a theory which is just going to blow your minds. This is brand new information. This is the first time it's ever been done. Bob has looked at the time it takes for an isotope, which is the an atomic small particle of an element, and how long this takes to decay, how long it takes to become perhaps another element, such as boron going to beryllium, you know, two elements. And then he's put forth a theoretical formula in relation to the age of the universe. And he will explain that, of course, in detail. And we've gotten some idea. Now, like, again, Stan Friedman says, if you're going to go shopping for a loaf of bread and you live in New York, you're not going to go to New Jersey. So if we assume that the entities that are using this material come from the same areas where the material may be, mm-hmm. and then we've got some surprising distances that we're going to hear about.
And tell us, who is scientist John Smith?
Scientist John Smith is, he's not, John Smith is a patient.
All right.
But the scientist, Steve Colburn, is going to look at John Smith's work and the work that we've done on the 60s surgery, which was Ron Noel. Some of these names are pseudonyms, as we don't usually like to use patients' names. But these are both very interesting cases with some similarities and surprising results. Steve is an eminent scientist and works in the field of material science with a specialty in nanotechnology. So he's going to come at this from a similar area, but looking at it a little bit differently.
Okay, he'll join us next hour. Let's bring in Bob Kuntz back on Coast to Coast. Hey, Bob.
Hello, George. It's an honor to be with you again.
Likewise. How did you get involved in this?
Okay. In 2002, I was a conventional physicist involved in particle physics, high-energy physics, relativistic heavy ion physics, things like that. And I took a photograph of a disc-shaped object at noontime on a bright sunny day. This is not a thing glowing in the night. And I got good pictures of it, and that started me into this whole area of interest in UFOs. And then I did an anti-gravity experiment and went on and on and on. And now I've come up with a connection with Dr. Lear and his group. And let me tell you, George, they're doing good science. You know, I've been at Lawrence Berkeley Labs, and I've been at Stanford, and I know what good science is. They're doing good science as best they can for a small group. And there's a report on my website that people who are interested in the subject should read. That's drkuntz.com, on a report on implants. So I've investigated this very carefully, George. I didn't take anything for granted. I investigated everything. I interviewed implantees. I analyzed the report by Steve Colburn. I analyzed a separate report by Dr. Russell Vernon Clark, which was also analyzed by Steve Colburn. And my conclusion is that this is most probably extraterrestrial material being placed in human beings of import. And perhaps common citizens as well.
Say that one more time, Bob. I want everybody to hear what you just said. You're a PhD. You're a nuclear physicist. Tell us again. What did you just say?
It appears to me that there's an extraterrestrial civilization or in entities who are placing in individuals objects which we call implants, small pieces of iron, cobalt, nickel, and with traces of iridium, so like meteoric iron, and as they're placing it in individuals in this country and perhaps around the world as well. And so it's kind of astounding, but that's my conclusion. I think that other scientists, if they approach this honestly, they'd reach the same conclusion.
What do you think they're doing? Why are they doing this, Bob?
Well, I don't know exactly. It looks to me like this device, the one I analyzed from Steve Colburn's report, is a, I think it's a remote listening device. It's a strange material. It's iron with cobalt with nickel and traces of large amount of iridium. Iridium is normally only found in meteorites. This looks like meteoric iron, but it's got a larger amount of iridium in it than normally we'd find in a meteorite. And it's also got a surface coating on it that's very strange that appears to be sensitive to phonons, the sound. So it looks like the surface is it looks like it's a device that's designed to intercept sound waves and retransmit them. Oh, that's another thing. These objects emit electromagnetic radiation. The ordinary piece of iron is not going to be emitting electromagnetic radiation, but these do, and they emit at a certain frequencies, scalar frequencies that I'm quite familiar with. 93 megahertz, for example, 15 megahertz, and on down. So, they're emitting electromagnetic radiation. They appear to be programmed to absorb sound waves. I think they retransmit, but listen to this. This is incredible. Excuse my voice is breaking. They self-organize.
You're that excited, Bob, huh?
Well, this is extraordinary, George. You know, I've been doing science for 40 years, and I helped discover an important particle. I did some work on it, but anyhow, they appear to self-organize. You break these implants up, George. Listen to this. They reassemble. Now, if you break them, today I broke a big magnet. A magnet will not reassemble, but these devices reassemble. Self-reassembly. That's intelligent material. We're talking about intelligent programming intelligence into materials. Self-reassembly. There are carbon nanotubes in these devices, and we don't find carbon nanotubes in nature.
Let's find out for a moment from Roger Lear. Roger, how big are the devices, and where are they generally found?
Well, the one consistent finding we have is that they are found usually superficially in the body, but yet near a bone. So there's a lot of places that you can think of, you know, certainly arms, toes, fingers, jaw, a number of different places that meet that criteria. And I believe they are placed there for specific reasons. One of the reasons might just simply be if you're going to do these in mass and you want to get them done in a short period of time, this is an easy way to do it. Now, remember, they have no visible signs of entry. There's no portal of entry. Now, in one case, which was John Smith, he had a couple of blood spots that was on the toe where we found this. But after a day or so, those spots disappeared. By the time he saw me, there was absolutely nothing there. This is a complex problem, and it's going to take a lot of time to and effort to try and figure all these things out. But before Bob leaves us, I want him to talk about his formula for determining where these might come from in the universe.
All right. Let's do that.
Okay,
let me
just mention before I'll get to that in a second. Dr. Russell Vernon Clark is a PhD chemist who also reached the same conclusion I did. He's from the University of California. A number of years ago, he analyzes Roswell artifact that Dr. Lear found, and the isotope ratios on that thing were off the walls, unbelievable, 20% isotope shift. Okay, now, as far as the time period, my conclusion is that the implant taken from John Smith was approximately, and this is there are some assumptions here, I came from an area of the universe that was in an advance of ours by 90 million years.
90 million years. That's amazing.
Yeah. Now, that's a 2% isotope shift, and I assume that it's a weak, electroweak decay that takes approximately a billion years half-life. So that's how I came up with this 90 million year figure. Now, that could be wrong. There could be other factors. I believe that the scalar electromagnetic radiation can shift isotopes. So, but, you know, I think we're talking that's an approximately good figure to use. And but these isotope shifts, very, very unusual, extremely, and this self-organization. How in the world do they do that? I don't know. You know, if you break anything up, it generally doesn't reassemble. I mean, when was the last time you broke a glass and the glass reorganized itself and came back together? That doesn't happen.
No, does not happen.
So I would say 90 million years. If I had to guess where this came from, if you have a time and you need a velocity to get a distance, and I don't really have a velocity, but let me just guess. I'm sort of, as an educated guess, I'd say maybe 50 million, I'm sorry, 50 light years would be the closest.
50. And where would that put us, Roger?
I was just going to have Bob tell us, where would that put us, let's say, in the Milky Way galaxy?
Well, and the nearest star is Alpha Centauri. That's about 4.3 light years away. So 50 light years would be, what,
ten times that.
Plus. 10 times that, or, yeah, something like 10 times that. So that's an approximate. Now, 90 million years, as far as light years go, the galaxy is approximately 100,000 light years across. The nearest galaxy, I think, is, about 10,000 light years away. There's a nearby galaxy, galactic distances are 100,000 light years approximately. So I would say it's coming from this galaxy, and the closest would be, I would say, somewhere within 50 light years.
And they've obviously developed a different propulsion system, Bob, right?
Oh, absolutely. You know, John Hutchinson, by the way, John Hutchinson sold his laboratory to a company, a laboratory in Germany. It's the United States is no, you know, we didn't do anything. We didn't follow it up. Now, the Germans are developing anti-gravity in their laboratory using John Hutchinson's equipment. And also the Russians offered two Russian scientists who did a very important anti-gravity and free energy experiment, offered it to the Department of Energy, and the Department of Energy turned it down. This is crazy. But anyhow, yes, anti-gravity and also hyperspace transport. And the laws of physics, we don't have the right laws of physics, George. We don't. You know, Ed Leedskalion had all kinds of ideas that have been
Coral
verified.
Coral Castle.
Yeah, we think we know so much. We need to really learn what the laws of physics are.
Why implant human beings, Bob? I mean, they must be doing, if they're doing it here, they got to be doing it throughout.
I would say it's
galaxy.
A remote intelligence gathering, but maybe that comes from my background. That's my guess. They're gathering intelligence on our civilization. Possibly they don't want us out in space with our nuclear weapons and barbarity. I don't know.
Well, you know,
they're gathering intelligence. I would say they're gathering intelligence.
Maybe I can add something to that. I did a study on 17 functional growth characteristics in children over a 40-year period, and I found that they've been advanced from 16 to 86%. Now, that, by any way you look at it, is not evolution, not even short evolution. The human race is changing. The kids that are born within the last 50 to 75 years are not the same human as myself or my friends. There's something different about them. If you listen to what children say and really listen, they're getting knowledge, but they're not getting it necessarily out of a book from a teacher or television or their parents. They have this particular knowledge that seems to be, you know, maybe part of the universe. So things are changing in human beings, and that's why I came to the conclusion that perhaps one group, maybe not all of them, is regenetically engineering human beings so that we stop the god-awful stuff that we're doing to each other and this planet. But in order to find out how this genetic experiment works, you've got to have some kind of remote information gathering, just as Bob said. And I think that this all dovetails to that particular reason.
Bob, as you look at this, and we've got about 35 seconds here left, I want you to give us your overview of what the heck is going on.
Well, I'm positive, 100% positive, we're being visited by extraterrestrials, and that some of them are putting implants in people. Now, I took a photograph of a flying saucer. You know, that's what got me started in this. And the Byfield-Brown experiment, I know that proves anti-gravity. And John Hutchinson's work proves it, and the Russians prove it. If someone, a scientist, want to visit my website and get clued in, you know, there's a scientific basis for this. Don't believe it, this idea that UFOs are nonsense. It's not true. You know, we really got to get moving. This affects our economy. You know, if we get free energy and anti-gravity, space travel changes, everything changes.
Oh, it all changes. Bob, thank you so much. And up next, joining us will be chemist Steve Colburn. Wait till you hear what he has to say.